Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Cordira Aisha Muhammad for Religion Means Alive. Today's date is October the 29th, 2015. Today's topic is sexual child abuse. You have power. This is a topic that I would consider very, very sensitive. So all callers that do call in and speak, please be mindful that this is a very sensitive topic, and this hits home for a lot of people who are listening into the call. And I would just ask that you also be respectful and mindful of people's feelings and be considerate of the topic at hand, because it is such a sensitive topic for people to speak about. First and foremost, I want to give thanks to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for waking me this morning, giving me use of my faculties, being able to see, hear, speak without needing the aid or assistance of anyone else. I want to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for giving me the courage to speak on this topic. It's very difficult for people to come forward and talk about any kind of abuse, whether it's, you know, child sexual abuse, domestic violence, you know, just any kind of abuse. It's a very sensitive topic, and it's something that's very, you know, hard and difficult to speak on because the nature of it. So, you know, just please bear with me, you know, as I speak through everything. I'm trying to take my time and not stumble over things as I speak. For all of the callers out there, if you do wish to speak, feel free to call in at 805-727-7013. And here is a few callers on the line, but I want to give people a few more moments to be able to dial in so that they can hear the full scope of call. I did make this call the maximum amount of time because I know people may have wanted to speak on this and also, you know, state their stories. And I wanted to be respectful of that and, you know, not have to cut them off abruptly, you know, in honor of time. So I wanted to make sure that I was able to give enough time to dedicate to the entirety of the call. Before I get started on the topic, I did want to go over, this is the last week of Islamic Heritage Month, 2015, here in Philadelphia, and reading over the brochure. Let me see here, I just want to make sure. There, tomorrow night is film night, and it's Muhammad, Legacy of a Prophet, at 1505 Cherry Street, Philadelphia, PA 19107, and that is the CARE, Council on American and Islamic Relations. They're hosting that, and it is free general admission. Saturday, and that's tomorrow night at 7:00 p.m. Saturday, October the 31st, there will be, the venue is Masjid Al-Law, and it is at 7401 Limekin Pike, Philadelphia, PA 19138, and the performance is called Forbidden Love Dramatic Theater. So that is available on Saturday, and let's see here. Yeah, that's it. So those two events are Friday and Saturday. So I just wanted to shout that out, and that's the last week for Islamic Heritage Month. So today's topic is sexual child abuse, and I gave it the subtitle, You Have Power. And the reason why I picked that You Have Power is because when a predator attacks a child, they are using their power against that child to conduct their evil act. They're taking the power away from the child and using that power to inflict that on the child. It's a power control type of situation, usually with sexual abuse with children. It's a power trip for the predator. So I wanted to make sure that in conducting this show that, you know, I not only speak on statistics, I not only hear from victims and also survivors of sexual child abuse, but I wanted to provide you with resources that are available for anyone that is listening to the call, whether you're dialed directly in or if you are streaming live on the web. I wanted to make sure that I provide information on how you can receive additional assistance and help, because so too often people speak on these types of topics but don't give you a resolution on, you know, what to do next or, you know, how to go about things. And, you know, it's needed, because anybody that has been through a situation with child molestation or child rape or child sexual abuse of any kind, you definitely need an outlet, someone to speak to, someone to just tell your story to without being, you know, judged or criticized or anything. Just someone to listen to what you're stating. You know, and children don't usually have that voice. And, you know, in the statistics that I'm going to read, children usually keep this quiet. They don't tell anyone what has happened to them. They, you know, mask it and they hide it. And what that does to you when you do those type of things is that it eats away at the core of your soul. And, you know, anyone who is listening, whether you're a victim or a survivor or, you know, it needs to be exposed. And I'm saying this for your own good, because keeping these things, and whether you're talking to, you know, someone professional or whether or not it's someone that you're speaking to in your own family, this is something that needs to be said. Because as that child being preyed upon, you didn't have a voice. You didn't have a voice to speak. You didn't have a voice to tell your story in most cases. Everyone's situation is not the same. So, you know, but most of the time you don't have a voice when someone has preyed upon you in this type of way. So if you are a person, if you are a person that has knows somebody who's in this current situation with, you know, someone you may know or you may think is being sexually abused, there is the Child Welfare Info Gateway, and that phone number is 1-800-422-4453. That number is used nationwide. So anybody within the continental United States can call into that number and report abuse, and they will direct you to someone in your jurisdiction to take it to the next step, or, you know, whether it's going directly to the police or some other agency. That number, Child Welfare Info Gateway, will direct you to, you know, to where you need to go at to, you know, find that information out. So, again, that number is 1-800-422-4453. And I may do another show on this to dig a little bit deeper into child sexual abuse, because, you know, this is such a wide topic. There's so many things that can go on, and different areas and different things that, you know, go on with this particular subject. So there is a number for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And the reason why I picked that number up is because you have children who are human trafficked, and they come from all parts of the world. And they range from children as young as 5 years old. Sometimes they're using these children as sex slaves. Sometimes they're making them, you know, indentured servants in their home. You know, sometimes these children receive physical abuse as well as mental and sexual abuse. So I have the number for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and that phone number is 1-800-843-5678. There is also a National Child Abuse Hotline, and their sub name is Darkness to Light. Their email address is www.d2larry.org. Their phone number is 866-367-5444. So you can reach them. You can reach them and, you know, follow the procedures or protocols, whatever they have out there for you to, you know, get in contact with someone. So let's see here. So I did that one. Then there's the National Children's Alliance, and their web address is www.nca-online.org. Their phone number is 1-800-239-9950. Let's see here. And then I did locate, it's a book out there that is available on Amazon, and the price in U.S. dollars, and that amount is $9.99, which is available on Amazon. You probably can download it into Kindle. I'm not sure. I didn't actually follow the link, but I just wanted to be able to provide you that information. The book is by Angela Shelton. Last name is S-H-E-L-T-O-N. And the name of the workbook is actually a workbook. It is Be Your Own Hero. Warrior, removing suffering, and live a joyful life. And that was it for the updates as far as, you know, just, you know, getting, you know, resources out there available to you. If you have any questions about any of those, you can, you know, give me a call after this call at 610-836-2120. You send me a text message to that number. If you wanted to email me, you can email me at qamrma@gmail.com. And for any of the listeners that are listening tonight, if you want to speak, you don't have to reveal your name. You don't have to say anything except if you want to speak and, you know, possibly tell your story about what happened to you. If you were a victim and now you're a survivor of child sexual abuse, Feel free to call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1, and I'll put you through. Okay, so I'm going to get into statistics. And I usually, you know, format my calls this way so that, you know, I can flow through the call easily and, you know, it gives me some kind of platform to speak on, which I like so that, you know, I'm not stumbling or rambling on about, you know, the topic that I'm speaking about. So, of course, you know, you guys know I like to do numbers as far as statistics-wise. So this was some old data that I found, and these numbers were still very alarming upon researching them. In 1997, the National Institute of Justice revealed that 22.3 million children between the ages of 12 and 17 in the United States, that was the approximate amount of children in the United States, 1.8 million were victims of serious sexual abuse or assault. Girls are twice more likely to be abused than boys, to be victimized throughout childhood, and 8 times more likely during adolescence. Children are 3 times more likely than adults to be victims of rape. In fact, among females, almost 30% of all forcible rapes occur before the age of 11, and another 32% occur between the ages of 11 and 17. Okay, I got to take a breath for that one. Upon doing additional research on statistics, I found out that 17 million children will be sexually abused over the next 18 years. 47% of molesters were molested, 42 million survivors, 77% of child molesters are married. Listen to that. 77% of child molesters are married. 93% of child molesters consider themselves religious. Again, that's very alarming. 90% of children know their abuser. 1% of child molesters are female. One in three girls are sexually abused. Now this is different statistical data from 1997. This is as of 2014 that I'm reading. So if you remember what I said back in 1997, it said that girls were more likely to be molested than boys. However, as of 2014, the data has changed. So again, 1 in 3 girls are sexually abused. 1 in 5 boys are sexually abused. 400,000 pedophiles are convicted in the United States. Only 1 in 10 kids will tell someone they were abused. 80% of survivors have drug or alcohol problems. 20% of male survivors will attempt suicide. 20 billion dollars a year is spent on mental health care for sexually abused children. When I read those numbers, I was literally sick to my stomach reading those numbers. Because why? First and foremost, those numbers are extremely, extremely alarming. If you have, you know, a smartphone and you go to the app, Megan's Law, everybody, you know, a lot of people know Megan's Law and what that detailed where that if someone is convicted of any kind of sexual assault, depending on the degree of it, they have to register as a sex offender. And what that does is once they register, they go into like a national database so you can pull up their information. You can pull up their information to find out where they're located. And when I did my own zip code, there are 48 sexual offenders living within my zip code, And I live in a very small township, so it's only 6 miles. That's the radius of my township, 6 miles. So that's alarming. And then when I dug deeper, I found out that I have a sexual registered offender that lives on my block. And two, directly around the corner. And what really alarmed me about that is we live directly behind an elementary school. So I didn't understand how could you be a sex offender and live directly behind the school where you can't have contact with children, and I'm sure there's a certain amount of feet or whatever like that that you have to keep distance from, you know, a school. So I didn't quite understand how that worked. But also, you know, doing, you know, additional research and things like that on this topic, I also found out that a lot of sex offenders, because they know that people don't like sex offenders, they use somebody's address to register, and they never live there. They live somewhere else. And there is no real agency, no real state or government agency that monitors where these sexual offenders go. I mean, yeah, they register. They're required to do that upon release from jail. They're required to, you know, register as a sex offender and, you know, tell their probation officer or their parole officer or whatever have you where, you know, they're living at, and then, you know, they come and inspect the area and things like that to see if, you know, see where the area is at and so forth and so on. But very rarely is there anyone that constantly checks up on this. Now, how a lot of these people are caught is because they reoffend. They reoffend. So even though they stayed in jail a number amount of time or amount of years, they come right back out and they do the same thing. Percent of released sexual predators reoffend again, doing the same crime or worse. I don't know if jail helps them. I don't know what they did. But that number is very alarming. It's very alarming. Even in the prison system, that they're not helping them. And once they're released, yeah, they got to register. You know, it's going to be on their record, things like this. They reoffend. Another thing that, you know, a lot of people fail to realize is that, you know, you meet people and you form these relationships with them, but how much do you really know about this person? You know, single women, you know, meet a guy or whatever like that. Even, you know, in the Muslim community, you go and you meet this person, you know, and you think because you're going through the masjid and you're taking all the right protocols and precautions that this person is okay. You know, I would suggest and this is just me, if you're introducing somebody into your household and you have small children or even adolescent children, that you do a background check on that person. And there's various ways that you can go about it, and you can find out. You don't even have to pay for this stuff. And I'll give you guys the information on how to do this. First and foremost, you can go to Megan's Law, like the app, or you can go online, and you can search that person's name. Now, we know within the Islamic community, a lot of people use Islamic names. No, you need to find out what their birth name is, what's the name on their social security card, or their birth certificate. Because that way you can run it through the system. Like, you can put in that person's name, and it will do a nationwide search if you go under Megan's Law. So that will aid you one way. And I'm just suggesting it because people can say one thing, and they can do the total opposite. Another way that you can search for someone to see if they ever committed a crime, you can find out traffic tickets. You can find out whether they got a lien against their house. You can find out if they are in a system with child support, and I'm not advocating it, but I'm just saying what I'm about to give you, the information I'm about to give you, will let you search this person's name, and it will come back through it goes through the Commonwealth, it goes through the magistrate, so local district offices, like if they had a parking ticket or something like out here, in any county within the state of Pennsylvania, you can find out what that person had that ticket for, or you can just pull up information on them to see if they ever been arrested, if they ever was convicted of a crime. And again, I'm suggesting this if you have children in your home. I don't care if this person told you that they are, you know, good. You don't need to check up on them. For your children's sake, for your own peace of mind, I suggest that you use this information that I'm giving you to validate that information. And, you know, not being sneaky and going behind somebody's back, what I suggest is that you tell this person, I'm going to do my own research to find out if there's anything out there that I need to be aware of. Because one thing for sure and two things for certain, when something like child sexual abuse happens, it can either destroy that person, it can go various ways. So, you know, no child should have to suffer the loss of their innocence at the hands of an adult, forcing themselves on them. No child should have to endure that. So I'm suggesting that you do this. And this is not just for mothers who are listening. This is for fathers as well. If you're getting married and you have your children and you're going to be bringing your wife into your home, so forth and so on, everybody needs to have this done. Everybody should have a background check done for the safety of your children. Because another thing is, this person could tell you, oh, I ain't never do nothing. I never been arrested. I never been convicted of a crime. I never did this. I never did that. And they are. And you may not know it because they're using another address to register under. So they're not going to come up at that address. Also, you could put your own children in danger. You could put your children, you could lose your children over this. Because you had your children around a known, registered, convicted sexual predator. And people don't understand this. Like, a lot of times these, you know, laws are in place for a reason. And it is incumbent upon parents to be diligent to protect your children. Because just as much as men prey on children, girls and boys, women prey on children as well. You know, when people look at the news and they see, when they see a woman teacher sexually assaulting a teenage boy, it's looked at completely different than if it was a grown male teacher assaulting a female student. It's totally looked at different. For men, it's a rite of passage. It's like, oh, you had the hot teacher hit on you, and, oh, you got to make out with the teacher, or you had sex with the teacher, this and that. And it's looked at as a rite of passage. It doesn't matter whether you're a boy or a girl. If an adult touches you, makes you feel uncomfortable, or does anything that you don't feel right about, you have a right to speak about that. You have a voice, and that voice needs to be heard. And, you know, parents, teach your children that no matter who it is, and I mean no matter who it is, that they should always come to you and feel safe enough to tell you that something like this is happening to them. You know, make your children feel comfortable enough. You know, you'll speak to your children about stranger danger, like don't go with strangers, don't talk to somebody you don't know. But the danger could be in your own home. Always make that available to your kids to be able to speak and talk with you openly and candidly about anything that makes them feel uncomfortable. Someone who makes them feel uncomfortable. Someone who may have done something to them that just didn't sit right with them. It's very important for parents to speak with their children about these things, because if your child doesn't feel like they can come to you, the cycle could continue. And they won't never say anything because they're too scared to tell you. They don't know what your reaction would be. So, you know, it's important that you make your kids feel comfortable enough to know that if somebody did hurt them or harm them, that they can come talk to you and that you're a safe person to talk to. And, you know, another thing is that you make it aware to the children that, you know, I'm not going to be mad at you. I'm not going to be angry with you if you tell me something. And I don't care who it is. I don't care what they said to you, what they said they would do to me or do to you. You can still come tell me, and I will make sure you're safe. Because a lot of times what these predators do is they blackmail the children, or they use their assertiveness of their power against these children to make them feel like if they tell anyone what's going on, that the whole world is going to end. And this is what predators do. This is exactly what they do. They basically put the fear of God in you to not say anything. Because whatever they tell you, as a child, you will believe it. Because, again, this is an adult that's telling you this. And since that adult has that power over you as being the adult, you're going to fear that person as a child. You're going to definitely fear that person because you don't know what the end result would be if you told. A lot of times predators use the fact that, you know, your parents will hate you. They will not love you no more. They use that. I'll kill you. I'll kill your whole family. I'll kill everybody to protect themselves from what they're, from the atrocities that they're doing to these children. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories, a lot of disturbing stories of how predators prey on the innocence of children and use that to their advantage to continue to hurt and harm children. And, you know, a lot of predators know that these are the things that children fear. So, again, a lot of times predators are people who are in your family. These aren't strangers. And as I said before when I read the statistics, 90% of predators are known to their victims. It's not somebody out in the street that snatched them and did this to them. Nope. I mean, in 10% may have been somebody who, you know, randomly did this. But, as I said, 90% is somebody that child knows. So whether it's a neighbor, a relative, teacher, coach, somebody, this child knows this person. And what that predator does in that instance is they use that platform to continually to have access to that child. So it's not just, and I'm sure, it's not just one child that they're doing this to. But see, what predators do is they play it out. They play it out like, okay, I know this person. I know the situation here. So it's not something that they don't think fully through. These people clearly think it through. They're cold, manipulative, and cold and calculating when they do these things. They're very calculating when they do these things. And they prey on the weak. They look for a weak link to wiggle their way in and to do these things. They have to have a constant source, because in order for you to do these type of things, you really have to be sick in the head. Like, you really have to be sick in your head to want to touch a child for sexual gratification. You have to be sick in your head. There has to be not only some kind of chemical imbalance, there is something truly wrong with someone, an adult, who thinks that they are sexually gratified by torturing, because that's what it is. They're torturing and they're using their power as an adult over these children. So this, you know, this cycle continues. So, again, I urge parents, whether it's women, men, you do the background check on your prospective wife or your prospective husband, even their children. Because, you know, we're starting to see nowadays that predators aren't always adults. You have a lot of teenagers between the ages of 13 and I'll say 17, because that's the cutoff before the age of maturity, which is 18, you know, here in the United States. So you have a lot of adolescents between that age of 13 and 17 that will prey on children younger than that, so 12 and under. They're preying on children. So, again, you have to be very cautious of when involving people into your home and involving them around your children. It's something that you should very cautiously take within consideration when getting married. And for those of you, you know, who are not Muslim, because, you know, we don't do the whole boyfriend girlfriend thing, you know, if you're bringing people in and out your house, make sure your kids are protected. Make sure you know these people. You know, be safe, be smart about this. Because once these type of things are done, They can't be undone. You can't rewind the clock back and say, okay, we're going to do this over and we're going to move on from there. Once that's done, just like if you ever had pneumonia, if anybody knows anything about pneumonia, once you had pneumonia, your lungs are permanently scarred. And if a doctor does an X-ray, they can look and see how many times you had pneumonia because your lungs are scarred. So they can see this on an X-ray. So once a child has been sexually abused, you cannot take that back. There's nothing nobody can do to fix that. Once it's done, it's done. You definitely have to get some help, some kind of mental and professional help around that type of situation. Because it's not something like a broken arm where you broke your arm and, you know, you put a cast on and it heals and it's back to new. You know, with sexual child abuse, it runs the gamut of different things. I see that I have a caller that is wishing to speak. I'm going to put you through.
Hello. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
This is Brother Salim calling out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hello, how are you?
Could be better, alhamdulillah, can't complain. What's today's topic of the show?
Today's topic is sexual child abuse.
Oh, okay, all right, alhamdulillah. Well, you know, the kind of person who would abuse a child is a very, very sick individual. But, you know, the personalities of people like that is what I kind of like, you know, I'm always interested in. You know, these are very manipulative, calculating, deceiving type of people. And I would say you kind of possess some of those characteristics, you yourself, okay? And the reason why I say that is because you did something very, very deceptive.
Okay. I'm not going to, I had to disconnect this call. This person has a personal issue with me in regards to another topic of a previous show that I did, and I'll deal with that later. So, inshallah, we can get back to the topic at hand in regards to sexual child abuse. And as I was stating, you know, it's a very hard thing to deal with, and it's not something, you know, that you can easily get over. And I'm a victim of sexual child abuse. And it definitely is something that you have a hard time dealing with, and, you know, as a child, you wonder why these things have happened. You wonder, what did you do to cause these type of things? And as a child, you don't understand those things. So it's important that, you know, you get professional help, because those type of things can eat at you. And, you know, it will, you know, tear your soul down. Because you just can't get a grasp on it. You got to understand why it was done and what made it you. Why you? Why would that person pick you to do that? And again, as I said, that, you know, child predators look to you because they see a weak link in there somewhere. They see a weak link, and they prey on it, because if they don't have easy access, a child predator does this. They're not doing it, you know, without thinking this whole thing through. Trust me, they're thinking this whole process through. How can I have access? Will I have, you know, readily be available to have access to this child, you know, without anybody interrupting what they're doing? Trust me, they definitely seek out and try to map out the whole process. So, again, people need to be very mindful of who they let into their home, especially when you have children and young children, because that's what child sexual predators do. They prey on younger children because they know that they can manipulate them more so than a teenager. They probably could get over on it as a teenager, but not so much so, because as a teenager, you start to come within yourself, and you know that when they say certain things, it's not going to happen, so they can't manipulate you like they want to, more so with a younger child. And I had watched Being Mary Jane the other night, and it just made me feel so empowered. Like, I wanted to give Gabrielle Union a high five through the TV when I watched that episode. I wanted to give her a high five because that was a very, very powerful show. And I'll elaborate on it if, you know, the listeners didn't hear about it or watch it. Again, if anybody wants to speak, feel free to call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1, and you can be heard. So the topic of the show was, you know, Being Mary Jane comes on BET, and Mary Jane is played by Gabrielle Union. And in this particular episode, her childhood friend committed suicide. Her childhood friend committed suicide because she was dealing with a lot of personal demons. And, you know, a lot of people didn't know what her demons were, but they labeled it, oh, she has mental illness, and, you know, she's bipolar, and, you know, she had relationship problems. But these are all red flags. These are definitely all red flags of someone who has been sexually abused as a child. Well, her friend wound up taking her life. She overdosed on pills, and she took her own life. And Mary Jane was preparing her funeral, and her friend's mother came with her stepfather and wanted to, you know, talk about doing the funeral arrangements. And from the show, what they stated was that, you know, her friend hadn't spoken to her family in over 15 years. And, you know, Mary Jane told the girl's mother that you can come, but her stepfather couldn't come. And at that point, I didn't know what the premise of it was, like, why didn't she want to marry, you know, I didn't know the whole detail of the story until the end, when she was eulogizing her friend, and she said the reason why she took her life is because that her stepfather was molesting her and raping her for years. And that's one thing that I don't get, that a woman could be so weak to stay with a man who you know was sexually attracted to your child. I will never understand it. I will never in the life of me understand how you could continue a relationship with somebody who you know has sexually abused your child. I cannot fathom in my mind to know that. And because I was a victim of child abuse, child sexual abuse, I protected my children so much. I got three girls. I protected them so much that people felt like I was overprotecting them. And again, you can never be too careful around people. And I'll tell you the situation that happened. You know, I had been friends with my neighbor for years. And, you know, she was having a little get-together for her daughters. And she asked, could my daughters come and spend the night because they were having a party? I said, no. And she said, well, you know, why would you feel that way? You know, we're friends and, you know, our children are friends. And I don't understand why you wouldn't let them. Like, she was really offended. And I understood that she was offended, but I didn't care. I didn't care about her being offended by what I was stating. Because in my mind, I'm protecting my children from something like that happening. And, you know, she pushed it. She's like, I don't understand. She's like, well, what did I ever do to you that you wouldn't want your kids to spend the night at my home? I said, absolutely nothing. I said, you've always been a good friend. You know, I have nothing against you. And she said, well, I don't understand why you wouldn't want, our daughters are, you know, very good friends, and why wouldn't you want them to stay at my home? Like, you know, it's right down the street. Why wouldn't you want them to stay? Like, I said, absolutely not. And she couldn't understand it. She couldn't understand it, and she was very offended by it. So, again, she kept pressuring me about it. Now, she had grown sons that are my age. And she said, why won't you let your kids stay tonight? And I said, because you have grown sons. And she was like, what do you mean by that? And I said, no offense. I'm not saying anything like that your kids have done anything or said anything or even, I said, it's just me. I could not live with myself if I subjected my kids to be in a situation like that. That's how cautious you become as a parent when something like that happens to you. Is it overprotective? Probably so. Because I didn't play my kids spending the night any and everywhere and things like that. And it had absolutely nothing to do with me because my predator lived in the home. My predator lived in the home with us. So, again, it wasn't a neighbor or something like that. It was predator lived in the home. But because that happened to me, I was just very protective all around. I wouldn't allow my children's father to give them baths, nothing. Change their diaper, nothing. And it wasn't because they set off something that made me feel that way. I just never wanted to take that chance. I never wanted to take that chance to have to go through that with my children. And it's something, you know, like, I never talked to my children about this. Give me a second. I never talked to my children about this. But I always asked them. And I will always have talks with them. In regards to, please tell me, if anybody, and I used to make the stipulation, anybody, I don't care who it is, I don't care if they tell you they're going to harm me, they're going to do anything. And my kids know I'm crazy. So they know that if that person threatened them with harming me, they already knew that wasn't going to go down. Like, my mom's going to take care of that before you do anything. So, you know, my kids knew that I would tell them, like, you know, I'm talking about if somebody say something to you that make you feel uncomfortable. Because, you know, like, this is, I'm going to tell you this. This is how they probe you. They probe you and they put feelers out there to see how far they can get. And it starts with general conversation. It starts with talking. So they, you know, they probe you to see how far they can get. And they'll do things like, oh, you know, do you want to do this? And, you know, as a kid, you're like, oh, yeah, I'll do that or whatever like that. And so it's like they're seeing what you're receptive to. They bait you. And as I was watching the news and was disgusted again with the whole Sandusky stuff that was going on, and, I mean, this man is appealing and things like that, and I'm just like, he used his foundation. He used his authority. And like I said, they probe and they play on it. He used his authority as being, you know, somebody who was in a good school, a good college that could open doors for a lot of people, and use that to set the foundation up to attack these people, to attack these boys, to attack this, you know, to do what he was doing in his home. Me, as a survivor of abuse like that, I'm sorry, you get, like, once you've been abused, you can automatically tell somebody else who has been abused. Is this something that clicks, that you know that person has been through something? And when you ask them or when you start talking about it, they feel comfortable enough to open up and tell you. I see it every day. And I'll give you an example. Little girl in my neighborhood. You know, I would see her, and I'm not saying any names because, you know, I don't know where this situation is at, but I've spoken on it to people who, you know, I pray have taken action against it, because I don't know definitively if there was sexual abuse. And that's something, you know, you have to be very mindful of and very careful of when you're probing and when you're asking questions. But I see a young girl, 11, 12 years old, and sweetest child ever. I mean, this child is still playing with dolls out in the street. This was last year, playing with dolls, playing with sidewalk chalk, playing with little kids, very respectful, very childlike, very innocent, very, very innocent. Seeing her over the summer, and it was like a switch that went off. But there's a different kind of switch where you know that a young girl is, you know, she has a little young boyfriend or something like that, and, you know, they may be, you know, doing whatever, versus a child who has been sexually abused. It's a whole different switch. It's a whole different attitude. And when I seen that in her, dressing different, back talk. And I'm talking about this child, very respectful. Very respectful, comes from a very respectable family. And the back talk, the attitude. It's a difference, as the old folks would say, you're smelling yourself. No, this isn't that type of smelling yourself. This is the type of I'm being defensive. Yeah, something happened to me, and now I have to be defensive. And I have to be defensive against everybody because I don't know who's going to harm me next. That kind of defensive. And when I seen that in her, I said something. I was like, what happened? And they was like, you know, yeah, I noticed that too. And I said, I was like, you know, it just doesn't fit right. Something happened. And as the person was telling me the story, that an uncle had moved in. And I immediately felt sick to my stomach. Because they not only told me that the uncle moved in, he was around this person a lot. And so I told the person, I said, something's not right with that situation. I said, because she was never disrespectful like that. Never, never. And her attitude is very defensive. It's not like a young person just being smart or being a teenager. It's very defensive. And when things like that happen, as you get older, you have to become defensive because you always want to keep your guard up because you don't want that to continue to happen. So you put this defense up, but you put the defense up to everybody. You put this defense up to everybody. And I just told the person, I said, somebody needs to talk with her. Somebody that, you know, you think she would feel safe talking to. Because, again, as I said in the statistics, a lot of children take their own lives because they don't know how to deal with it. As I stated, 1 in 10 children never tell anybody about it. Never tell. And then you have some people, some children, who tell and nobody does nothing about it. Because somebody needs the income that this person is generating. They don't want to feel lonely. They got their own personal issues. Or they just crazy. You know, if anybody watched the movie that T.D. Jakes had, Woman Thou Art Loose, I urge anybody who, you know, wants more information on this topic to watch that movie. What really gets me, and I think what is really disrespectful to the child, is when family knows that this person does these things and they cover it up. And what's even more disrespectful is when it's a parent, like your mother or father, and they cover it up. And they act like it never happened. Or, you know, you'll get over it. And African-American people have a problem with doing that. You will keep something like this hidden. And what that does is it gives that person access to keep doing it to other people. If your child felt comfortable enough telling you what happened as a parent who helped sustain that child in your stomach or the father who helped produce that child. It is your duty to act on it. How in on God's green earth could you know somebody is sexually abusing your child and you do nothing about it? You do absolutely nothing about it and you cover it up like it doesn't exist, like, oh, that didn't happen. If any one of my children acted on something like that, because I know what pain that causes, I would turn my child in. I would disown my child if my child did something like that to another person, to violate a person in that manner. To violate that person in that manner, you cover it up. When you cover it up, you just push that person on to the next person. And trust me, that person goes from household to household wherever they see what their target is. And they'll never stop. They'll never stop doing it until somebody speaks on it. And until somebody says something about it. And until somebody has the balls to stand up to them and stop worrying about what people are going to say about you and speak on it. If there's any victims listening on this line, you are no longer victims. You are survivors. And you have the right to take the power back from your abuser. Never let no one tell you that you did anything wrong to cause that. You were a child. And that person was an adult or someone older than you that knew better, but they used that against you to harm you and to rob you of your innocence. We should never think that our precious reputation is so much that we cover things like this. And the African-American community is famous for it. I think back to the episode in Oprah where Monique got up and talked about how her brother was raping her for years. And both her parents knew. They both knew, but they didn't turn their backs on their son. They turned their back on her. How do you continue to cover up for this person and you know what they were doing to your child? Brothers and sisters, like, how do you cover that up? How do you turn the child away that this happened to? You turn that person away, but you protect the child who did it. And then the child who committed these acts admits to doing it. And you cover it up, and you act like it doesn't happen, and you shun the person that it happened to. I applaud Monique. I applaud her for her strength. I applaud her for her strength. I'm talking about your brother. Like, y'all had the same mother and father, and your brother? Your brother. And your parents don't protect you, they protect him. They got disgusted at you because you revealed what their son was doing to you. How, I can't fathom how someone could cover this up. How someone could make you shut up and not talk about it and sweep it under the rug like it's something that will go away. It never goes away. It never goes away. It never goes away. I'll open up the lines again if anybody has a comment, question, or concern that wants to speak. Number is 805-727-7013, and you can press 1. If you have something to say, you want to speak, you have a comment, question, or concern regarding this topic tonight. So I'll continue. Again, feel free to press 1 at any time, and I'll see it on the dashboard, and I'll be able to put you through. You know, I think when you become an adult, you get a better grasp on reality of the severity of what happened to you. You know, it's very difficult to deal with things like that. Now, my abuser was my uncle. And, you know, people always ask me, why did you wait so long to tell? Why, you know, why didn't you say something sooner and things like that? Let me explain something. I had a very good relationship with my father. Now, my father was, you know, he was old school. He was the type of person a child used to be seen and not heard. And my uncle knew this. He knew these things about my father, and he used them. And I'll give you an example how he used these things. Okay, my mother worked at night, and my dad would be home, but my dad was a longshoreman, so he would work crazy hours sometimes. Sometimes my dad would work 2 days straight, and sometimes, you know, he would sleep down at the union hall and things like that. So my dad worked crazy hours. So my uncle was there. And me being a child, 8, 9 years old, you know, in the summertime, my mom goes to work, my dad not there, I'm going to go outside. And, you know, if anybody knows anything about the 80s, we kids didn't do anything. We didn't do anything, like, as far as, you know, getting in no trouble like that. We outside playing double dutch, we playing king ball, you know, we talking about what we had for dinner, like, what, are we going swimming tomorrow, things like that. These are the things that we talked about as kids. We playing jacks. We doing whatever, like real kids used to do back in the day. So, you know, we wasn't in no trouble. Like, we weren't doing no drugs. We wasn't drinking. We ain't had no social networks and all this stuff, you know. We didn't even really even talk on the phone back then because we couldn't. You know, parents ain't play that tying up the lines and stuff like that all day long waiting for a call to come through and you on the phone. So, you know. And I would go outside at night when I know my mom then went to work and she like, you know, Tiffany, don't go back outside. Tiffany's outside anyway. You know, my dad at work. So I'm going to just sit outside on the step with my friends because their parents home and they could sit out on the step, but I had to come in. You know what I mean? Like, who wants to do that? I want to hang out with my friends, you know, and I was a tomboy, so I played with the boys all the time and stuff like that. I played baseball and, you know, hung out with the boys and stuff like that. So we would be talking about, you know, what game we got coming up and things like that. So, you know, I'd be like, okay, who we playing next week? And, you know, trying to get things together about, you know, what we was going to do. And, you know, I mean, crazy stuff because I used, like I said, I used to hang with the boys. We used to walk the trails and stuff like that before our games and hit rocks in the creek and stuff like that. Yeah. I was a tomboy, so, you know, do those type of things. But nothing, like, mischievous or nothing that will harm nobody, you know, nothing like that. So I'm, you know, sitting out on the couch with my friends, hanging out with my friends and stuff like that. And my uncle used it because he knew how my father was. that if he told my father that I was outside, I would be punished. He knew that. He knew that, and he used that as his leverage. Like, if you don't come in here with me, I'm going to tell your dad you was outside. And I'm like, oh, crap. If he tells my dad, I'm dead. Like, I'm dead. I'm going to be in so much trouble. I'm dead. And that's what he used. He used that as his leverage. And I told, but I didn't tell the right people. And I'll tell you why. I told my cousin. And my cousin was like, you know, my protector. And she beat him mercilessly. She beat him. She beat my uncle to almost a bloody pulp. But I begged her not to tell my dad, because if my dad knew the truth, he would have killed him, and he would have killed anybody that stood in his way. And I knew that. I knew my father would have killed him, and anybody tried to stop my father, he would have killed anybody that stood in his way. And anybody who knows my father knows he would have did that. So I didn't tell him. Told my cousin and my brother, who is now deceased, he caught him, and he beat him to a pulp. And because he played on the sympathy of people, my uncle, he played on people's sympathy, because people thought he was slow and he was special, he used that. He used that as a defense. And so, you know, my brother was home and everything like that. And he knew he couldn't do anything as long, because some of my brother was around the same age. So he knew he couldn't do anything as long as my brother was there. So you know what he did? He went and told my father that my brother threatened him. And my dad put my brother out. And after that time, after about 4 years of being abused, he moved on. And he moved on to my aunt's house, and she had several young daughters. And I just felt sick to my stomach, because I knew it wasn't his first time doing it. He'd been doing it. And I'm sure people in my family knew he was doing it. But they decided to keep it quiet. I always promised myself, I said, I had no contact with him throughout the years and things like that. It was few and far between family events and things like that, and he would be there. And, you know, I remember 1 year he tried to hug my daughter, and I almost flipped out. Don't touch me. Don't touch my children. Don't say nothing to me. Don't say nothing to my children. And people in the family would look. I knew what that was about. They knew what that was about. They can act like they don't know, or like, you know, it's a hidden secret. Y'all knew why it was like that. Y'all knew. And I had warned him. And I told him to his face. This is years ago. I told him to his face. I said, do not ever say anything to me. Do not say hi, goodbye. Don't say anything to me, because the day that my father dies and you do that, I'm going to tell everybody what you did. And I guess he thought he still had that power over me. He felt like, oh, I can still do what I want to do. Not no more, dude. I'm grown. And I'm not that child that you used to do that stuff to. I'm not that child. So he tried it the day of my father's funeral. He tried it. He spoke to me, and I walked past him. And he stood in front of me and said, I said hello to you. And I looked at him like, this fool got to be crazy. First and foremost, I'm going through a whole thing. My dad then died. And you got the nerve to stand in front of me and say that? Okay. So for anybody who knows me, you guys know I love to expose people. So what I did was, since he didn't have no problem with doing what he did to me and felt like he had authority over me and power over me, you know, got on Facebook. Profile page wasn't secure. You could post directly to his timeline. Wrote a two-page paragraph from beginning to end of everything that he did to me and copied everybody in my family. Now, some people in my family never confronted me about, oh, you're lying, because they knew. Y'all knew. And when I would see my cousin's behaviors, I knew what happened to them. But then, when you're a victim and now you're a survivor, you know these things. Copied everybody. None of them said anything. And, you know, I don't know whether it happened to you or not. Only you and God knows that he knows what happened, whether or not you were abused. And everybody don't have the strength to speak on these things. Everybody don't have the strength to face their attacker and take back their power, what they stole from them. Everybody doesn't have that. But I promised myself that I would no longer be that weak child. You will no longer hold that over me. Because if you let that consume you, it will eat you alive. And just like on Being Mary Jane, how her friend took her life, that could happen to you if you don't find some kind of resolution to the problem. Now, a couple of my cousins contacted me, my god cousins, they contacted me and said, why you never say anything? Why you wait this long to say anything? And I said exactly what I said earlier. If I would have said anything to my father about that, now, granted, my dad wouldn't have punished me because I was outside. No, he wouldn't have. He definitely wouldn't have done anything about that. My dad would have killed anything that stood in his way. And I said, you guys, knowing my father and knowing the person that he was, you know he would have killed anybody. He would have killed anybody that stood in front of him and tried to stop him from doing what he wanted to do, and that would be take him off the face of this earth. And that is the only reason why I never said nothing, because I know the rage that my father would have had. I know firsthand what he would have did. And anybody who knows my dad knows he would have did that. Without a shadow of a doubt, he would have done it. My dad had a whole arsenal of guns in the house growing up. My dad was a hunter, so he had an arsenal of rifles, shotguns. He had all kinds of guns in the house. And my dad wouldn't have second guessed or second thought. If I would have told my dad, he would have believed me 100%, and he would have took out anything moving. I know that unequivocally. I know he would have done it. So that's why I didn't tell no one until after my father's death. And, you know, a couple people questioned me, and my response to that, go ask your daughters. Ask your daughters, did that happen to them? Ask them. If you don't believe me, what do I got to lose? What would I have to gain to create some kind of lie like this? What would I have to gain? Something this heinous, what would I have to gain by exposing him? Somebody who I don't have no contact with anyway. Like, what would be the benefit of it? You know, some people question me. And like I said, go ask your daughter. Go ask them if it happened. Matter of fact, go ask him directly. Am I a liar? I dare you to ask them. Because y'all know. Y'all definitely knew. Y'all definitely knew what was going on, and y'all knew. And this is where I said enough of that. Like, that's that 50s, 60s, and 70s crap. I wasn't raising my kids like that. Somebody do something to you, you tell them. We have to be parents to our children, but we also have to open the door enough to make them feel comfortable with speaking to you and telling you about different things that's going on with them. You know, I only have one child that's still in high school, and that's the first thing, like, when I come home from work, you know, that's the first thing I say to her, you know, assalamu alaikum, how was your day at school? You know, anything new? What's going on? How was your day? You have to talk to your kids. You can't be a dictator over your children. You can't put the fear in your children where they're too scared to say anything because they don't know how you're going to react. And again, I knew if I told my dad would have had my back 100%. I know that. I didn't tell because I didn't want to see my father go to jail, possibly for the rest of his life, for killing 3, 4, 5 people that stood in his way. It had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with my love for my father. You know, these things happen every day. And to see those numbers, to see the people on Megan's list that live all around you, it's fearful. It's very fearful. Like, I mean, you just don't know. But again, it's not always your back door you got to watch. It's the front door. And again, these people prey on children that they will have readily access to, easy access to. It ain't so much the creepy person who you only see on holidays. Yeah, they'll try it then. But these are the people that's in your own home for the most part. In your own home. So, again, you know, I just implore you, if you want any of this information that I shared during the call about different facilities and numbers and places that you can go to get information and, you know, to talk to somebody or something like that, feel free to contact me. Because this generation, you got to open that up. I told my kids, be more scared of me than you are of them. Because if anybody ever did something to you, know that I'm going to be mad at you for not telling me. Because you know I would do something. And my kids were like, Mom, you crazy. You darn right I'm crazy. I'm darn crazy about protecting my children. No child should have to lose their innocence in a situation that they did not agree with. No child should. No child should have to live with the stigmatism like they did something because their family members are covering this crap up. I can't fathom how a mother and father could cover up the activities of their own child against another child. I can't fathom it. I can't understand it. I can't grasp it. I don't want to understand it. Because that means that you're a sick individual, that you would literally cover that up. That's one of your children, two of your children, one child attacking the other, and you want to cover it up? How could you live with yourself? How could you live with yourself? I don't understand how you could live with yourself knowing your child is a predator and you're covering it up to protect them for what? Harming another member of your family or your own child. I don't understand it. It's sick, and you need just as much help as the person who's committing these crimes. You know, so, again, you know, I thank everybody tonight for tuning in, because this was a very difficult topic for me to talk about. You know, as an adult, you work through a lot of things, but it took a long time for me to understand and to be able to speak about it, because a lot of people be like, yo, I can't, how do you talk so open about it? If you are still scared to talk about it or to speak about it, that means you're still giving that power to that person. When you're scared to talk about it, you're giving that power to that person, and that person still has a form of control over you. My abuser has no power over me, no more. Because who's going to do something to me? Who's going to do something? Nobody's going to do nothing to me. Who's going to come to my face and confront me about that? Nobody. And I want to see them try it. Nobody's going to have that kind of gall to come to me and approach me about anything that I'm saying, because you know what I'm saying is the truth. 100% the God's honest truth. You know, anybody who hasn't talked about this, please seek some kind of professional help, because you can't manage these type of things on your own. You can't. You may think you can handle them, but they affect different aspects of your life. They definitely affect different aspects of your life. Like reading the statistics, you know, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, it's rampant. And when you do drugs, when you drink, you're masking the problem. But once those drugs wear off, and once the drunkenness wears off, your problems are still there. That's why you need to seek professional help to show you how to manage and how to deal with those issues. So, I definitely suggest anybody, like, you can get in support groups, different things like that. I mean, me, I try to keep everything that I do confidential. Now, I do have a bachelor's degree in mental health social services, so I am familiar with this topic. I'm familiar with the protocols and things like that. Again, I'm not a PhD or anything like that, but I do speak with a lot of people about different things because they feel like I'm open enough to be able to talk to them and speak with them about different things, and they know that I'll keep it in confidence that I won't share it with anybody. So, again, if anybody wants to talk to me, feel free to do so. I don't have a problem with that. But I also suggest that you do get professional help with this, because it's not something that's easy to deal with, especially if your abuser is still around, and especially, you know, if you have to see that person or deal with that person. It's definitely not easy. And, you know, if you did say something and people are still covering it up or not speaking on it, that can even be more difficult because you don't want to draw the rift in between the families. So I'm just going to conclude the call for tonight. I really appreciate everybody taking the time to listen. into this because it was a topic that was very difficult for me to deal with. But, again, I'm a survivor. I'm no longer a victim. And my abuser has no power over me, so it doesn't matter to me what he thinks or who thinks what. Anybody who knows me knows I'm like a duck with water on his back. It rolls right off. It doesn't bother me. But, again, if anybody wants to reach out to me directly, you can reach me at 610-836-2120. You can send me an email at qamrma@gmail.com, and I'll try to respond back to you. I want to thank the Law Soprano with the Island for making me Muslim, because that Islam is something that helped me greatly, because it tells you that, you know, Muslims are not perfect. People are not perfect, but Islam is. And we don't question the cutter of a law. We don't question it. Things happen. We may not know the reason for those things, but there's a reason for everything, and everything happens for a reason. I don't know what those reasons are, but maybe because I'm a stronger person that can deal with these type of things, it helps somebody else to be able to deal with their situation. That speaking so freely of it and not showing that I'm afraid to speak about it gives someone else the courage to, and to deal with it. Or somebody who doesn't know how to handle that situation takes the initiative to speak out on it and try to stop it before it escalates. So, again, I thank everybody for joining me tonight on Religion Means Alive. Today's date was October 29th, 2015, and the topic was sexual child abuse. You have power. You're no longer a victim. You're a survivor. Thank you for joining tonight. Assalamu alaikum.